Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the Story Studio. Oh yeah, here we go. Check it out now.
Welcome to the Story Studio, a podcast where an independent publishing company explores the world of self-publishing, independent art, and the future of storytelling. My name is Daniel Wilcox, and today I'm joined by regular...
Hello, Luke Condor. Hello.
And we have special guest Craig Martell. Say hi, Craig.
Hey, how are you guys doing? Craig here.
Fantastic. So good. Craig is a former Marine, a former business consultant, Alaskan resident, husband and dog owner, and the successful author of five beloved book series spanning the genres of sci-fi, post-apocalypse and thriller. He's also an incredibly, incredibly efficient and lightning quick writer and an incredibly swell dude.
How's it going, Craig?
Oh, it's going great. Thanks, Dan and Luke, for having me on board. I appreciate it. I hope you're... listeners get something out of this besides bored out of their mind with the guy who lives back of beyond Alaska and spends all day writing or outside with his dog.
That sounds like heaven to me. Sounds like absolute heaven to me.
But, that's what we're aiming to get to.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, I do call it God's country up here because, man, it's you and nature, and we live a ways away from the city, so... It is pretty much just what we want to make of it.
You say how far are you from the nearest city?
About 10 miles.
Okay.
Yeah. You say it's minus 50 at the minute, minus 50 Fahrenheit.
Oh, it got that this winter. Right now it's a beautiful day, probably about 50 degrees Fahrenheit outside. So yeah. It's very nice. It's pleasant. It's spring green. Everything is turning green. So it's a very, very nice time of year. The mosquitoes are out. Unfortunately, they've been out for a week. They came out before all the snow melted. It was really annoying.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they're the worst.
Have you ever been so cold that you can't write? Like your fingers just won't physically move? Because I've been a few times. My fingers get pretty chilly sometimes. I just struggle to use my phone.
Yes. As a matter of fact, this last winter was really harsh in regards to the cold. And even wearing gloves, I'd take my dog Phyllis, a pit bull, on about a half mile walk. That's our morning walk. And I'd come in and my fingers would be so cold and so stiff and so painful to touch anything that it took me about an hour for them to thaw out enough before I could write. So that was probably... 2 or 3 months out of the winter, it was that cold.
Yeah.
How do you get around that?
You wait 2 or 3 hours after you come
back. There's no miracle cure to cold fingers.
Now, I could wear, I have these moose mittens that go underneath a pair of gloves, and that's the best way to go, but then I can't handle Phyllis very well because it's so dark. I get up way early. That's the Marine Corps. So I take her out at like 3:30, 4 in the morning before any of the other dogs get out.
When people say they get up early, I normally think, yeah, me too. I get up at, you know, 5:30, 6:00. But no one's ever said, I get up about 3:00.
It's an alien, which that helps when I write aliens because, it fits right in. Mm. Getting outside, and doing it and being part and parcel with nature up here is really important. It's what you need to do, even if it's a little cold. To live here, you have to be okay with cold. You don't have to like it. I don't like it when it's that cold, but I'm okay with it. So, yeah, come back inside, warm up, and then write. So, yeah. Which is what we're here for. Yeah, so let's talk about writing, man.
Cool. What are we all working on currently? Daniel, do you want to... we're planning the new series, right?
Yeah, so I've had a bit of... it's been quite a nice week for me because I've had about 3 or 4 weeks just cracking on with the edits for They Remain. But this last week, we've actually, been planning the first book in a new trilogy by myself and Mr. Condor, which I don't think we'll say too much on yet because we've still got to work out the ins and outs. But we're aiming to have essentially just a bullet series, aren't we? Just try and write something fairly quick, fairly speedy, pop it out there and see if people like it.
Yeah, we're going to try and mimic a bit of Craig and Michael Andelay's and that sort of fast turnaround.
What genre are you guys looking at?
It's looking at a bit, it's post-apocalyptic primarily with elements of fantasy, so...
Okay. Sounds cool. And that's getting up quickly. It's great. It's okay. The revenue stream is nice. The tail grows with each new book. Mm. But that's where you manage reader expectations. As long as you can deliver a book every 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever the frequency is, even if it's 6 weeks, the readers know that. And come 6 weeks, they expect to see that next one. And you deliver, your readership will grow. Because you've established that credibility and you've given them a series where, hey, every Tuesday my favorite show comes on. So every 6 weeks my favorite books arrive and you keep that story going. You have that main overarching arc, that story arc where they want to find out about their favorite characters. But each story needs to be self-contained as well. You can't leave them on a massive cliffhanger with, and he fired the gun at our main character. See you next time.
Well, that's it. I mean, we've got essentially two series already, one that's already sort of releasing on its way, another one that we're still working on what we're going to do with it. But we wanted to come up with another one that was quite quick fire that actually got out there just to kind of up our backlist, really.
What about you, Craig? What are you working on?
I'm working on Nomad Avenged, which is Terry Henry Walton Chronicles Book 7, co-written with Michael Anderley. I am reaching for halfway done right now. I should pass the halfway point today. And it's a good continuing series. That book is this series is very, very successful. The last three books all worn the Amazon bestseller tag.
Yeah. Fantastic. Congrats.
Congrats.
Oh, thank you. And I just published a book yesterday, the third book in my Cygnus Space Opera series, which is the ninth book that's in the Free Crater universe. So that was a nice add and something I've been promising my readers for, about 6 months. And it's been 5 months since I published a book in my own name alone. So it was nice to get that back out there.
Yeah. So you're halfway through that book, so that must be coming out, what, Saturday?
we would think. I try to give my editor a couple weeks heads up. I used to give her 2 months, but then things got a little more volatile in regards to timing. So now 2 weeks. And also I have my editor on salary to make it easier and not mess with her time. Because if I'm only going to give her 2 weeks notice, here you go. You're paid. And if I don't deliver, well, then I lose money. If I do deliver, we're good. So that also helps some accountability.
Yeah, definitely.
I told her I would deliver the book on the 22nd of May. And we hope to publish, not hope. We need to publish this month. So we're shooting for a publication date of 29 May.
Wow. That's amazing. So we will get into more into the detail of sort of your process and the books and everything. But before we do that, I just want to get into the big one. I do want to sort of jump ahead and go straight in with mine because we are getting a dog on Saturday and it's called, it's called Alaska. And I was like, oh, wow.
Oh, great.
That's perfect. Yeah. We're driving down to Kent on Saturday. It's like a 5-hour drive, staying over my sister's and then picking up. Yeah, she's a Samoyed. I don't know if you get many Samoyeds over there.
Yes.
I just thought, for some reason, you're in Alaska. I'm getting a dog called Alaska. This is meant to be.
how serendipitous. No, that's yeah. that's great. The dog ownership is great. And I was thinking of that this morning while I was walking around, that if it wasn't for my dog Phyllis, I would rarely leave the house. So she's yeah. good. She's good for my health and well-being.
Does she influence the writing at all?
I'm sorry?
Does she like influence your writing in any way?
Oh, my God. The End Times Alaska series, Phyllis is one of the main characters and, wow. and a fan favorite. And that, nice. That series was a best-selling series with my traditional publisher. I'm known as a hybrid author because I have a series with the traditional publisher as well as a number with that are independently mm-hmm. published. So yes, Phyllis, I always write dogs. I always write dogs that people love to have at hand. And yeah. actually, let me read you a sentence I wrote right before you guys got on because I was trying to catch up. I'm at it's 11:15 here in Alaska in the morning, mm-hmm. and I have written 380 total today. So I would every minute it's like no, you got to jam. Let's see. Okay. Char looked at the coonhound. Don't even, Corey sedated preemptively. Char rolled her eyes because the coonhound's going with him on a tactical mission.
Yeah.
So always try to put dogs in my story because man's best friend, right? Or, yeah. or yeah. human's best friend.
I love putting just pets in general. I mean, I don't know if what we did with a dog was a bit of a mistake, but, we, spoiler alert for anyone that hasn't read the rot yet, we ended up killing the dog in the first book. But we have got an alternative to that in book two, just to kind of pull that back. But every time I've spoken to someone about what they thought of the book, that was the first thing that came up.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's don't do that. Don't kill off your main character. Okay. G.R.R. Martin gets away with it, but nobody else. Yeah. Don't kill your main character. Don't kill any of the happy animals.
Yeah. Yeah, my big whoop this week is actually a previous guest that came on a couple of months ago, John L. Monk. I'm actually just finished reading his collaboration with Jay Thorne on the American Demon Hunter series, which was just they named them in different series. Oh, Washington D.C. And it's about a 20,000 word novella, very very quick read, didn't take long at all, but. He writes one of my favorite characters I think I've ever had in a book, which is just a 45-year-old D&D player that goes hungry on demon powers that he suddenly possesses overnight.
amazing.
And I think because he is a D&D player and because he loves all that kind of stuff, he writes it so well. But it's rare that I ever smile or laugh out loud when reading the book. But and I know it's a horror in a sense, but... Just that character himself, I absolutely loved, and I'd highly recommend that book to anyone.
So that's American Demon Hunters, Washington D.C.
Washington D.C. Yes.
Okay. Cool. Okay, that's cool. That's cool. I did get the pleasure of meeting John L. Monk a couple weeks ago at the Smarter Artist Summit.
Oh, in cool. Texas. Yeah.
How was that?
Good dude. He's taller than I thought.
Yeah, I saw pictures. Yeah. He looks like a giant. He looks like just from guessing, 6'3" or something like that.
Something like that. Yeah. Broad, big dude, but good guy. Good guy and damn good author.
Yeah.
And damn good author.
Yeah. All the cool guys were there, it seemed. I saw Michael Bunker even pop down. Kevin Tomlinson was there. All the cool yes. people.
Oh, yeah. My first conversation with Kevin Tomlinson, D2D, right? They were one of the sponsors of the show. They provided the badges and the badge holders. Mm. Well, me... And with John L. Monk, he understood. I wore my GaryCon badge holder that I just picked up. GaryCon, that's for all the old school role-playing gamer dudes in that convention. Well, I walked up to Kevin to introduce myself, and he's like, "What's this?" And no D2D badge holder, and the badge that's showing D2D was kind of buried. And it's like, oh, man, now I feel bad.
Oh man, we want to go to Smarter Artist so bad, but it'll be on the horizon at some point.
Yeah. So if you
Gary Con 10, man, Gary Con 10 is coming next year.
Nice.
So have you got a big whoop for us for this week?
Nomad Avenged. I've got that. I published a book. I also was in Galactic Frontiers. That was published 2 days ago, which is an anthology with some heavy hitter science fiction space opera authors, Chris Fox, Jay Allen, to name a couple. And that's currently wearing the bestseller tag. I brought up my Amazon author dashboard, and two out of the first three listed books were wearing the tag. So that was really nice to see.
Wow. That's phenomenal. Yeah.
And getting the Expanding Universe 2, that's the anthology that I'm honchoing. We've got 23 authors. We've got the stories all submitted, ready to go. They're currently being formatted. I have to subcontract the formatting because I don't own an Apple with vellum, and many people do. So that just makes it easier, make it look better, because this is all about indies reaching into the traditional publishing world and showing that level of professionalism. So getting it formatted right now, we're going to put it up for pre-order on the 15th of May. So we've got that. The conference, we're at about 210 people registered for 20 Books Vegas. Yes. And 20 Books London, February 3rd and 4th, 2018. Working on that, got a guest speaker lined up yesterday, a new one that is going to be really beneficial for people. Not announcing any of the guest speakers yet, but we have some, there's going to be plenty of horsepower there as well in London as there is in Vegas. So a great opportunity for people to meet and greet. And even introverts, you're going to get something out of this because you're going to find somebody, a kindred spirit, who you can talk with. It's like this. I mean, we're disembodied. I'm here 9 time zones away from you guys, but we can still carry on a good conversation about a topic that we share an interest in, and that's self-publishing.
Yeah.
So this is what those two conferences are about, bringing people together to talk about what they need to do to get to the next level, or share some of their experiences with others who are just need that one last thing, who are working hard and just need that one last little leg up, as it may be, not leg over, which that's a UKism.
That's a well, it depends how up. The conference goes.
Yeah.
a leg up. That's what we're talking about.
But yeah, it's already in our diaries for next year. Very much looking forward to going to the London one.
Yeah, for sure.
Superb. We actually, Michael said he sent a note to the website company, because what we want to do is we want to mirror our website, for the 20booksvegas.com, mirror it to 20 Books London, so we don't have to redo all of the website setup work. And then we'll just edit that site. And we were hoping to have that done by next week so we can open up registration.
Wow. Keep an eye out.
We're thinking about 70 right now, but the response from Europe has been overwhelming. So I want to open it up early just in case we blast past those 70 registrations, because then we'll need to reserve the next room over at the Runnymede on Thames, where we're holding it, because that's still available. If we can get that one, then we can do 150 people. And that would, I mean, whoever needs to get that leg up, like I said, or meet with other authors. If we're getting that kind of response, then we need to be able to help them out.
Well, I think you'll get a lot of people from England, just because, I mean, England is, you know, it's a little island. We're all sort of hidden away a little bit. And I think we all sort of listen to the American podcast. We all follow, we're all in the same Facebook groups and stuff, and we all want to get involved, but there hasn't been very many opportunities unless you have enough money to fly over to the US. So this is amazing for us, especially.
Yeah.
Just trying to help out, man. That's the it is prohibitive to fly all the way over here. It's what, 7 time zones. So if you came a couple days early, now you're adding in costs and you'll be tired for the whole time, and it makes it a challenge. It does.
Yeah, yeah.
Now
yeah.
For 20 books of Vegas, we've got a couple people coming from Australia.
Wow.
We have a couple of people signed up from UK already. We have somebody coming from mainland over in Europe, the continent, I believe you call it, and Canada. We don't have anybody from South America yet that I saw, but there's people coming from all over the place, and it really puts pressure on us to make sure it's a great show. So starting early is the best thing we can do.
Yeah, for sure. So if we're okay, so if we pull back and start looking at your writing career, Craig, very so we read a post on the 20 Books 50K group, which obviously we were talking about a second ago with the conferences, and I think we mentioned it a few times on the podcast. But we've seen in this post that you have, is it 21 books planned out for this year? You basically have a very nice grid of all the books that you want to get written, all the covers sorted, all very organized. How is that a thing for you? How are you able to write that much? How are you able to plan that far ahead and look at all these series?
I published the 21st book was the one I published yesterday. So those are the covers of those that I published, as well as a few extras leaning forward, which was a Chris Fox tip. Have the cover before you start writing the book, because it just makes it easy to write the book, just to make sure that you reference exactly what people are going to see on the cover. And that's important, because people are looking for that. The covers that have nothing to do with the book, it creates a discord in the readers, and you might lose them. Or somebody gets the book because of the cover and then don't find what they're looking for in the book, and then you can lose them that way too. So getting the cover ahead of time is important. I do that. Tom Edwards out of the UK has done, about 15 of my covers now, and that's those are moneymakers on their own, just because Tom Edwards does such great artwork. And for those that are able to blow up the images on the covers, it really expresses what they're going to see in the book. The Free Trader series, those are all those very specific scenes within the books. So it's important. I try to line up the covers about 6 months ahead of time. So it helps me to manage my workload. I write every single day. And like I told you guys before we started recording, I've only written about 400 words today, and I need to get cranking as soon as we get off. With the conference, with the other things, it impacts a little bit on my creative process. But I really shoot for about 3,500 words a day. And if I can write between 500 and 1,000 words a creative hour, that's an uninterrupted hour of production time, then I can get where I want to go. And 3,500 words a day, that's a million words in a year. That's a lot of books. Because my books I'm shooting are 60 to 70K. Some are as little as 50K. And a couple are over 100,000 words. And it's okay. It's important to tell the story. You have to contain that story. Like I mentioned about the arcs, each book needs to be its own self-contained story, even if it picks up from a previous book, because that helps a reader, especially if there's a delay between when they read the last book and then read the next book. So it's managing the process, it's the deliverables. And one thing I did is on 20 books I published, here is my publication schedule for the year. And people said, hey, that's insane, that's too much. Well, taking on the conference and the other things, yeah, it could be overwhelming. But as long as I get my 3,500 words a day, I will get there. And the only reason I shoot for 3,500 is I edit as I go. So I want clean copy. My first draft is generally a 98% solution. If I'm having problems with it, I'll shoot it about halfway done. I'll shoot it to my developmental editors for a quick read. They'll read it in half a day and then get back with me. No, here's what we're getting from it. And then I can adjust. I can go back to change something, or I can just press forward and fill in those gaps that they identified. Developmental editors are important. Responsiveness, everybody has been so, so great in helping me. And that's part of the reason taking on the conference. It's about helping others, because people have been so helpful for me and made my career as an author successful. Sure, I'm writing the books, but nobody writes alone. Even though if you look where I am, yeah, I'm kind of lone way up here, but I'm not really. I've got the whole world of people holding me up, and that's very important.
Yeah. So you're writing about 3,500 words a day now. Do you plan these books out? Do you have like an outline, or are you pantsing, as it were?
I have outlines in my head. I don't write them down, because I have a tendency to start explaining and writing, and I'm like, I'm going to write. I might as well just write. So I do outline them in my head. Right now, I spend probably about 2 hours outside a day with my dog. We have 2 acres, and we're backed up to a large woods, about 10 more acres, where it's just me and Phyllis, where we go in there. So I have all this time to myself, I think, and try to build those outlines in my head, build those story arcs. I will write down ideas, because as I'm working on this book, I might think of things for, hey, for the next book, this would be a good hook. This would be a good scene. And I'll dive into the next book where I've put the template. I always try to put templates for my next two or three books out there, and then throw those notes in there, so I don't lose them, because you know the creative process. You think of a great scene while you're in the shower. You get distracted when you come out because your son has a runny nose, and all of a sudden, an hour later, you can't remember anything of what that great idea he had in the shower. So it's important to get those notes down and then clear your mind and come back to the work in process. But I am a pantser all the way. If you look for any outlines, because if I died right now, you would have no idea what's going to go on with this book. So.
Cool.
It sounds like you've got all your ducks in a row in terms of your actual process with your editors and your designers and everything else. How long did that take you to get set up? Was it a long process, or was it very much like you were lucky enough to find the people and just it all clicked into place?
Oh my God. The first book, I've tried to find a publisher for the first book, not a publisher, an editor for the first book that I ever wrote, and a cover designer, and I struggled mightily and didn't find either. So I published that book, and it in that form, it was a piece of crap. It was a good story, but it needed professional editing, and the cover didn't match at all. And the title didn't match either, but it was a good story. So it was an abject failure from that perspective. And then I wrote the second book. The second book that I ever wrote was the first book in my Free Trader series. Once again, it was a good story, but there was so much misalignment. There was it needed editing, and I published my third book was the second Free Trader book, and that's when I met Michael Anderle. That was March of last year, and we were talking about something else, because I was a business consultant. I have a law degree, so he was asking me some business questions regarding 20 books and another joint venture that he was working on, and he mentioned, oh, by the way, you're going to change your covers, right? So that's I got that feedback without getting a spear in the chest saying, you suck so bad, you shouldn't be publishing. And I took that first book. I gave it to a publisher who was looking to add to the post-apocalyptic stories that they published, but not a zombie book. I'm like, hey, I have a survival book. So I sent it to her, and she's like, "Ooh, the title. Ooh, the cover. Ooh, hey, I need to edit this. However, this is a great story. Here's what we need to do." And so that's the series that got traditionally published. So I would always say, if you can't find an editor, you can't find a cover artist, you publish anyway, because nothing in this business is going to kill you. You can press on. You make a mistake, somebody can help you with that and get past it. Like my publisher, she's like, hey, this is a good story, but here's what you need to do. And she helped guide me through that process. And the next version of that book was a really good story, and it became a bestseller, a story that was in essence dead. So it took me probably 8 months and 10 books before I found an editor and the process that then worked for me. And it was only late last year, probably December, when everything came online. I have the covers, I have the editor, and the editor very responsive. When she says she's ready for it, and I say, hey, this is what I'm going to send it to you, that aligned. And the developmental editors have been there for me all along, except I've been moving up in the priority list, because it's important to take care of all of your editors and all of your people. Send presents, because they help bring out the best version of you. So Alaskan birch caramels, Alaskan smoked salmon, I'm willing to send that to as often as we need to, because they help me do better. But it took an awful long time, and it took a lot of books before getting this. And like I said, my editor moving her to salary, that helps me. It helps her. It helps. It's just a better situation all the way around, because it gets me what I want, and it puts her in a better place financially to be able to respond to my foibles, as it may be. Yeah. But also, I use Grammarly. I try to send her a clean copy. I would be happy if she sent it back and there were five changes and that's it. So that, and good, and I'd pay her for that, and that's great, and I'll send you the next one too.
Yeah,
just confirm that it's a.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Good book. I like that professional confirmation.
Yeah. It seems as a strong sense of altruism. I don't know if it's too broad to say that in the indie community as a whole, but especially something that we've seen a lot from the people, the 20 books to 50K guys, and obviously yourself and Michael. It seems to be a lot about finding the things that work for you guys, getting to a point where you're sort of rising high enough that you can start to bring people up with you. And I think that's something that's quite admirable. But is that something that you always thought of doing from the start, or did it come from a place of money first and then we'll kind of see what happens?
I am in a good financial position. Like I said, I have a law degree as a business consultant. I'm retired from the Marine Corps. So I'm in an okay financial position. So it's not writing, even though I write like a fanatic, it's not about the money. So this is an opportunity for a rising tide floats all boats.
Yeah,
because as I move up in the I was ranked 28 when I checked earlier overall in sci-fi on Amazon, a really good ranking, and I love seeing that. But that, because that's an ego boost. But I try not to make it about my ego. I've had enough of a life where I did that, and that it's not good. It's not a good look on me. Trying to help other people. This is what a great opportunity by being a successful author. That allows more people to come in. At the end of the year, if I made $250,000 and I spent all of it on other people doing things to help me make that, it would be a wash, because first I wouldn't have to pay the IRS anything and the Internal Revenue Service, the tax people. And second, we would all win. We'd end at the beginning. Oh, man, look at how much money you made. Made. I did the air quotes thing because it can be expensive to be a self-published author. It doesn't have to be, but it can be. And I pay my editors. I'll be paying a formatter for some books. I pay well for covers, and it's okay, because everybody gets a chance to do better. It's let's just say it's making up for some other things from my past that I was more selfish than I should have been. So trying to make those changes. I'm 54 years old is all. I've got a lot of time left, I hope, and trying to do right by the rest of the world at this point.
Yeah, I think it's admirable. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. So, Craig, your first book, you said just then that the story was good, but maybe the other elements weren't quite there. So you've obviously got some sort of built-in storytelling storytelling muscles there. So have you always been writing? Have you always been telling stories or been reading? Where did that come from?
That's a great question. I think I love telling stories. I've always been a reader. I grew up, I'm a child of the 60s. So I grew up, we had one television and we didn't get to have it on during the day or anything. So in the summer, you couldn't sit and watch TV. And we lived I was born and raised in Iowa. We were a little ways away from other friends of mine, so I couldn't go see them. So I read in the summers. I read an awful lot of book. I read The Hobbit when I was in seventh or eighth grade. J.R.R. Tolkien, what a great author.
Yes.
And then 1974 came around, and Tactical Rules published Dungeons and Dragons. You already mentioned that once. So I lived less than 3 hours from Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. So on weekends, my mom would drive me over there, and I'd get to go to the dungeon. I played some games with the original crew and got into Dungeons and Dragons. But once again, I didn't have a whole lot of friends who lived close enough. So it came about the stories about doing scenarios. Even if I didn't play, it was still about the storytelling. So from an early age, it was all about the story. While I was working in my adult life, I tried writing and I couldn't, just because there was so much else to do, kind of an overachiever. I was always be the best in my day job, whatever I did. And then finally, I came to Alaska. My wife is a professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and that's why we ended up here. And I worked up on the North Slope inside the Arctic Circle. The coldest I've ever experienced was minus 74 Fahrenheit, which is just cold enough to kill you if you stay outside in it very, very long. I was outside for 30 seconds and thought I was going to die. So I didn't like doing that anymore.
Yeah.
And I retired from that and then just came home and it's like, oh, I can do this. It's finally time. Write a book. You've always said you were going to write a book. Don't be that person who says, hey, I'd love to write a book, and I never do. So I started off, and 61 days later, I had that first book, 100,000 words in the can. My first target was 1,000 words a day is all. And I figured, hey, in 3 months, I'll have a book.
Mm.
Well, as the story went on and as the muscles, the writing muscles got stronger, then the story came quicker and quicker. So now I wanted to get it down to 15 days, but I'm not sure that's going to be possible. So I am budgeting 21 days to write a story.
That's phenomenal. Yeah. What would you say out of all of your books? I mean, how many is it you say you've got to your name at the minute?
I've got 21 titles, a number of box sets. I'm in a number of anthologies, so probably over 30 different stories.
And which would you say is your, out of all of them, your favorite book, and why?
Oh my God, what a tough question, because I love writing science fiction. I especially love my space opera, which I just released yesterday, Cygnus Space Opera. Look for it on Amazon. have to make a shameless plug, man. I'm sorry.
Of course, of course.
I think my very best book is one I worked on. I worked very closely with Kat Lind. And she helped me with the developmental approach, and we spent a lot of time on the phone building that story. And that's about as close to an autobiography as I can get. It's the only book that's not science fiction. It's in the thriller genre, about a terrorist coming to DC and blending in. And that's, like I said, it's as close to an autobiography as I'll write, and it is by far probably the best written story of all of them I've done. I took my time with it. I really tried to do it right. And not that taking my time, and that was just because of linking up with my editor in order to review sections. That was what took a long time, not actually writing the book.
Yeah, yeah.
So how
did it feel to publish that? So personal to you. You spent a lot longer on that one than the other books. How did that feel compared to publishing the others?
It was a cold fish slap right in the head because I published it and I tried to market it. I advertised it and it just didn't sell. As of today, I think I've sold a total of 85 copies. So I thought, well, let's make an audiobook. So I paid the big money to have an audiobook done of it, and I'm at like 85 copies total sold. So it was that's what the slap in the head was about. It's like, this is the best book I've written. This is an autobiography and nobody likes it. It's not that they don't like it. It's just that getting into that genre,
yeah,
it just didn't get there. marketing, you can have a great book. I'm sure I need a new cover. I'll put a new cover on it here fairly soon, and hit it out there again. But I found my stride with science fiction, and it's very important. The first four books I wrote were in three different genres. Anybody getting started, don't do that. You know, find your legs. Write in one genre, at least three books. See if you can find traction, and then move on to six books, nine books, 12 books, whatever it might be. But it's important to stay in one genre, also to learn the tricks, the tips, tricks, and tropes that you're trying to hit.
It seems to be a bit of a common thread that people will genre hop in the first few books and then advise new writers not to genre hop in the first few books. It just seems to be a part of the process that a lot of people go through. But was there a particular thing that stuck out about sci-fi that you liked more than the other genres you've written in?
It's just what I like to read. And that's what I would always recommend. Write what you like to read, because you're more critical of it. Mm. So you're going to be more aware of what you like about it and how you can work that into your own stories, especially the technical aspects of writing. I don't write fantasy because of the great fantasy authors out there and the flowery language and certain things that seem to hit within the fantasy genre. Like, I cannot write like J.R.R. Tolkien. I don't think anybody can.
No.
And he defined a certain genre that then became huge. So let's go with that. I can't write like J.K. Rowling, so I'm not going to do urban fantasy. But I can write like Andre Norton or Larry Niven, some of the old school writers. I'm trying to – Anne McCaffrey is one of my favorite authors. I'm really trying to learn her style in order to improve my own. So that's that would be the ultimate book where somebody said, hey, this looks just like Anne McCaffrey's work. And that would be a huge compliment.
Yeah.
But someday, hopefully, I'll aspire to.
Yeah. But just out of curiosity, I'm really interested. So you're in Alaska. You've got the 2-hour dog walk. What is your what does your perfect writing day look like? And what does your actual writing day look like?
Yeah, the perfect writing day. I've actually had a few of those.
Yeah.
I always get up at 3, get up, do that thing, find out that the internet is down, write, then take Phyllis out, come back in, write, drink lots of coffee. Maybe there's a leftover croissant sandwich in the fridge. And
leftover what?
A croissant, which a sandwich on a croissant.
All right.
Oh, wow.
We don't. I don't think we have those here, do we?
No.
A little something to eat and write. I've had a few of those days, and those are 10,000 word days where everything's flowing like it's supposed to. The distractions are minimal, and probably. I don't think I can do that right now. So right now, a perfect day would be no problems with the conference. The anthologies are coming along as they're supposed to that I'm managing. And I can get in probably 6 or 8 hours of uninterrupted writing time and get about 6 or 7,000 words. So that would be a perfect day. My average day right now, I'm only getting about 2,500 words, but that's the anthology. Stories were submitted, have to do the basic editing on them, compile, and now that's with a formatter. So that has is not as much of a time investment. The conference is growing in regards to time investment, especially as we prepare to do the 20 Books London website and get that up and start getting people registered. I did contact a number of people over the last few days about being guest speakers, and what a great response. And since we're running so tight on the finances, all we're trying to do is just pay for the conference room, a little food, coffee, because I drink a gallon of coffee a day. and that's it. We make no money off these conferences. So we've asked the guest speakers, hey, can you come and be a guest speaker? And by the way, can you pay for yourself? And that usually is a tough sell. However, they've all been so accommodating, because in the indie community, indies helping indies, rising tide floats all boats. So everybody has been so accommodating, and that was great to see. We do have some big names, not to reveal yet, but London will be big. So outside of that, if then I can get in and start writing, like as soon as we're done with this podcast, I'll have about 3 or 4 hours of uninterrupted writing time. So I think today is going to be a great day, because I got to handle some of the issues early, took care of them, got a few words down on paper. I've got a plan of what I need to do for the next few chapters. And I got a book published yesterday, 2 bestsellers, making some money, book reports looking good, ching with great regularity. And we're talking about indie publishing with two great guys out of the UK.
Who the hell are they?
Somebody that got called bald. I can't believe that, man.
Best way to meet a person. You look particularly bald today.
Oh, thank you. It happens more than you think. Yeah.
What would you say? So, I mean, obviously the Facebook group has a lot of the people in there are new writers. What would you say, it from your experience, are the biggest mistakes that new writers are currently making on the indie scene?
I'll give you one that's probably a little bit controversial. It's seeing the money and not all the work that goes into it. Hmm. It took me, I started writing in October 4th of 2015, started writing full time. That's what I did. That was my business. And I made my first profit in December of 2016. I was actually negative cash flow until then, which was okay. I'm in a position that was okay. But most people are not. They look at, they'll have one big month and they're going to look at, hey, I can go full time now. This replaces my day job income. And then they go and they find out that you have to produce with regularity, because you're going to have highs and you're going to have lows. If your lows are big enough to pay all your bills, then hey, you can be a full-time author. But if they're not, then you might have issues. And on the side of that is, if you take what you love, like I tried to do this with golf when I was in high school. I was a very good golfer. I was scratch, right? I could shoot a par round on a new course. But as soon as I started looking at going to college to play golf, I started crumbling. I couldn't do it. Take what I love and make it a job, and now it's not so attractive.
Mm. Yeah,
that's what happens with some writers. Hey, I'm doing this. Okay, I made a couple great months, and they go full time, and they find that the muse has left them, and then they start to panic. Then it becomes real work and no longer fun. I'm having a great time at this. The money's good. The stories hopefully are good. Getting a lot of great feedback from readers. I get a lot of support from fellow indies, and I try to give that support back to other indies. So that makes it a great gig. But understand, I think that's probably one of the biggest mistakes, is people look at this, hey, I want to do this full time because writing is fun, stories, fans. But can you do it day in, day out? I write every single day, holidays included. Mm. So can you write 365 days out of the year, and can you do it as your main job? And then, oh, by the way, you got to do marketing and that other non-sexy stuff too. So that's a challenge. And that's, if you can write every day and you can write every day regardless, then you're probably, that's the first big hurdle to becoming a full-time author.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a lot harder than people think. I think people see the Hugh Howies, or they see people just wantonly posting, oh, I made 20,000 this past month or something. And they seem so nonchalant with it that I think newbie authors think, oh, that sounds, they make it look easy, but it's obviously very much not.
Oh, Hugh Howey hit it big with his with Wool. Yeah. That was his 10th book. Keep that in mind.
Yeah.
J.K. Rowling, probably one of the best storytellers of our time, 12 publishers told her to pack sand.
Mm.
So, yeah, it sucks to be you guys, but 12.
Yeah.
But that's you've got to put up with, you've got to survive that as well, because she talked about writing in a cafe as a single parent, trying to get that first book done and then getting rejection letters. And guess what? She kept at it. And that's the diligence it takes. It takes that internal drive. And I think a lot of indies have that. Some see the success of, hey, the swagger of the successful author. That's kind of earned. Some may get there with their first book, and some it's more like the 20th book. And that's what the 20 books group is all about. If you've got 20 books each making, and it's a ridiculous number, it's only like $7 for each book a day, you're going to make $50,000, 50,000 pounds if you make 7 pounds per book per day. That's not very much. That's 3 copies and a few page reads, and there you are. But that's what the 20 books is all about, the 20 books group is about. But how do you write 20 books? Oh my God, I have a full-time job. However long it takes, it's okay. And that's managing reader expectations. It's keeping a pen to paper, and I couldn't write when I had a full-time job, and I'm amazed by people who can. So that's how I went full-time. And so, yeah, I wrote 20 books in a year and a half. But I'm full-time. I write full-time, and I don't have that threat of I'm going to lose my house if I don't make money this week. So that's in a little bit different situation. Yeah, but if you do have the opportunity to write full time, then get to it. You only need to make 7 pounds per book. That's it, per day.
That's it. That's all there is to it.
Piece of cake.
I definitely recommend people to definitely get onto. We have recommended this before, but the 20 books to 50K group. If you're out there listening and you haven't joined the group yet, why? We keep talking about it. It is fantastic. And also, any people out there want to come to London group? We could do a carpool. We could all go down together. It'll be great. Whereabouts is it again? Where is it being held?
It's Runnymede on Thames, which is just outside London proper. I've heard because we call it 20 Books London, but it's not really in London.
Yeah,
it's a great. So I was corrected on that, but it's easier for people to look up London on a map and fly into Heathrow.
Yeah.
And then it's not very far from Heathrow, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm going to count on the taxi driver to know where he's going.
Hey, the taxi drivers in London, they have what they call the knowledge, which is one of the hardest tests in the world. And you have to know like every like road, every street in every direction in London and Greater London.
They're not allowed to be a taxi driver.
Or they're not allowed to drive a black cab. So yeah, they'll know. They'll know.
Okay. All right, I'm good with that. That sounds great. Yeah. So yes, I'm counting on the taxi driver to get me where I need to go. And we'll be there. We'll get there a day or two early, and it'll be a great show. Andrew Dobell, shout out to him, Creative Edge. He is managing the affairs there for that show. I'm setting up the guest speakers and stuff, but he's really the one making everything happen. So shout out to him and his cover designs as well as his books. So
cool,
amazing stuff.
So we're flying through. We're nearing the end now. I just wanted to quickly ask if there was any other mediums like films or comics or anything that you'd be interested in trying in the future, or if you're comfortable with the novels.
We are. We've been trying to push End Times Alaska as a good mini series because Alaska stuff. The reality shows are so bogus regarding Alaska, except for Alaska State Troopers. That's a very good show. That shows how Alaska really is, more like it. Unfortunately, it shows the crime. But Alaska Preppers or whatever the hell those stupid ass shows were. Those don't watch those.
Yeah,
they don't show real Alaska. So we've been pushing that because Alaska is big on American TV right now, at least. And trying to get somebody to look at it and think of it as a miniseries. And also the way I wrote it, very very short chapters. Is better for a screenwriter, so it would be easy to turn that into a screenplay. Carthurian Gambit, of course, is prime for a TV series, whether Netflix or one of the Prime studios. So those are always welcome. We haven't Michael hasn't gotten any offers yet, but I don't think he's going to spend his life and not see TKG in a on TV in one way or another. The Terry Henry Walton Chronicles, another one that would be good for a mini series to start, or just a TV series, that would be good. We'd love to do that. We would love to collaborate with screenwriters to make those stories come to life. I've done audiobooks. We have audiobooks of all our books, the Terry Henry Walton Chronicles, in the process of getting done. They'll all be an audiobook. As far as getting a graphic novel of the Terry Henry Walton Chronicles, we've thought about that, but that's, we don't know how to market to that group. We don't know about making it there. It's not that it's out. It's just that it's a step too far right now. Maybe someday we will, but it's just the time investment for an hour that we get to invest. Because for me, if I can get an hour of uninterrupted writing time, that's worth about $100 to me over the course of the year. So all of 2016, that hour spent writing had a negative value. So because I hadn't made a profit yet, but this year has been exceptional. So if I can spend an hour uninterrupted writing, that has a pretty big value.
Cool. We don't want to keep you too long then. I know it's an expensive hour you're wasting with us. We'll start to wrap up. I mean, we do have a quick fire round, if that's okay for you. Just a few questions to throw at you. Feel free to answer or not answer, or, you know, take it and leave it. Dan, are you ready?
I am ready.
Craig, are you ready?
I am ready.
Perfect. Oh, Dan, do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
After you, mate.
Okay, cool. Biggest hobby outside of writing?
Walking with my dog.
Collab or solo writing?
Our collaboration is a little bit different because I do write the book independently to begin with, and then Michael reviews it. I stay in touch with Michael as I'm writing it. So I would always say writing independently.
Okay.
Would you take the one-way ticket to Mars?
No.
What was the last book you read?
The last book I read was by Jonathan Brazy. It was one of his twins' novels under United Federation Marine Corps. Colonel Brazy is a retired Marine, and he writes a great space opera that's based on the Marine Corps. So it's right in the wheelhouse.
Yeah. The one person you'd like to meet?
The one person I'd like to meet. Would it be too much if I said a hairy Luke Condor?
I can bring a wig to the 20 Books of London event. That's fine. I can grow a hair. It's just not particularly lavish hair, I would say. It's a little bit like...
So many great people out there. When I come to the UK, I would like to meet Mark Dawson, actually.
Mm, yeah. Mm. Your favorite place to write?
My office at my house.
Who's your favorite writer?
Who's my favorite writer? A great question. I have a number of them. J.R.R. Tolkien and Anne McCaffrey. Two people from the islands over that way.
Cool. Jam or... I've got Marmite written here, but I don't think you have that in America. I think it's called Vegemite.
Oh, my God. My son is getting married in Australia to an Australian this December.
Yeah.
He said Vegemite is disgusting. So I've actually never had it. So we're going to go with jam.
Okay, cool.
And final question. Would you come back on the show?
Oh, absolutely. If I haven't bored the snot out of your readers, I probably already, whenever you're post this, they're going to dial up and say, no, not that guy.
No, I don't.
I think pretty much the opposite. I think there's been some fantastic stuff that people could take away from this one.
Definitely. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Craig, where can we follow you in your work?
The best place is probably my author Facebook page, author Craig Martell, or craigmartell.com, and that's craigmartelle.com. I have a blog there that I probably don't update as much as it's so easy to update Facebook and post things that I think that has taken the place of a lot of blogs.
Cool. Okay, so a quick thanks to Disaster Piece for the intro and outro music. Thank you to Acast for hosting this podcast, the listeners for listening. Thank you to our patrons over at patreon.com/HawkandCleaver.
Thanks to Dan, my co-host, for being here, because without you I'd be alone. And thanks once again to the amazing Craig Martell and Phyllis, who I imagine is listening into the show somewhere. Yeah. Just sat behind Craig, I imagine. Yeah, thanks again, Craig. It's been amazing.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you, Luke. Thank you, Dan. Really appreciate it.
Join us next time and we'll have more talking to do and noises to make.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Story Studio podcast. Still hungering for some podcast goodness? Then why not check out our other show, The Other Stories? Oh, and did you know, every time you leave us a review in the iTunes store, a puppy is born. Cute, eh? Anyway, toodle pip.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This Mother's Day, treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their advanced eye care duo brightens and firms skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths skin all over. Go to OSEAMalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.